Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And what a week it's been. We're all sheltered in place here. Sheltered in place with my extremely attractive audio engineer, which is not a bad way to be. Sheltered in place. If you had to shelter in place, I can think of no one else I'd rather shelter in place with. And so here we are, everyone hunkered in the bunker here, along with the, I don't know, the rest of the world, I suppose, at least the civilized world. It's almost uncivilized. So let's go to Springfield, Missouri, for some encouraging coronavirus news. A baby was born in the toilet paper aisle of a Walmart in Springfield, Missouri. That's right.
Hey, it's open.
That's right. The Walmart was open and there was a lot of room in the toilet paper aisle. Now, people are wondering why was the woman in the toilet paper aisle since there was no toilet paper. But that question became of secondary interest when the woman's water broke there inside the Walmart right there in the toilet paper aisle. And then, just by happenstance, workers there say another lady came around the corner and says, quote, "I'm a labor nurse. Can I help?" And they said, yes. And because of the coronavirus outbreak, the nurse had gloves in her pocket and she was ready. And they delivered the baby right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you go. All right. So there are things happening. I don't even know that can really rightly even be said to be associated with the coronavirus. This could be the first instance of non-coronavirus news in the media all week. Right here on the Weekly Worldview. No, we have another one. We have some non-coronavirus news from the Science Really file, where ITV.com News has a headline that screams, "Scientists prove Darwin's survival of the fittest theory." Huh. Yes, prove, they say. Now, that's a strong word in science. And even more so in science. But one thing I noticed about the headline is the phrase "prove Darwin's survival of the fittest theory" is in quotation marks, which in literary, we all know what that means from a literary standpoint. That means it's not exactly 100%. It's in quotation marks, right? So how do you put the word "prove" in quotation marks? How do you do that? Well, they did it right here. Believe it or not, that's all that really matters to the urinalism graduates who write the headlines for various news outlets, is they just want this headline, and the very first sentence is about all, they know that that's about all that will be read. The first sentence of the article says, "Scientists have proved one of Charles Darwin's theories of evolution, survival of the fittest." And that's it. That's all they care about. Now, I predicted when I read that sentence, I bet I will read this entire article, and nowhere will it actually be proven. And how do you even prove survival of the fittest? That's not even the theory. That's just one element of the theory. Anyway. And how would you prove that? Anyway. But the article goes on to say that the lead author of the study is one Laura Van Holstein, who is a PhD student in biological anthropology. And here's what she says. This is what is being cited as proof. She says, quote, "In chapter 3 of On the Origin of Species, Darwin said, animal lineages with more species should also contain more varieties, subspecies in the modern definition. My research investigating the relationship between species and the variety of subspecies proves that subspecies play a critical role in long-term evolutionary dynamics and in future evolution of species." Okay? That proves it. That case closed. Anyway. The urinalists who wrote the article say that her research could now be used to predict which species conservationists should focus on protecting to stop them from becoming endangered or extinct. Uh-huh. Why would we want to stop any species from becoming extinct? Do you want to flout Darwin's now proven theory of survival of the fittest? Really? And why should we care if one species or another goes extinct? That's the way it works. That's the way Darwinism works. You're supposed to let it happen. To interfere with it would be unscientific. Wouldn't it seem unscientific? Or at least going against science, trying to fight against science? What it really belies is the underlying realization that people actually care about animals, and that that the construct of Darwinian evolution is set aside when people actually think rationally. We don't want the elephants to go extinct, even though from a pure Darwinistic view, one would assume they should go extinct if they do. Anyway, let's see. In On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, Darwin argued that organisms gradually evolved through natural selection. The work was considered highly controversial at the time of its publication because it contradicted the Bible's account of creation. And indeed it does. Oh, by the way, the urinalist who wrote this article, who will not be named, left out the whole title of Darwin's book, because that wasn't the full title. No, it was also called, well, the full title is On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life, because Darwin was a racist, as were a lot of people in his time. But he was particularly virulent racist who used his theory to defend the idea that white people were superior to black people, is what he did. Anyway, so do I have anything more from this? I think this was yes. I think that's it. Why interfere with evolution by trying to preserve species, you know, or even human beings? Why? Because it's all made up, that's why. All right, now, meanwhile, excuse me, we have another story from the Science Really file out of Jupiter, Florida, from studyfinds.org. You've heard the conspiracy, perhaps, that the coronavirus was produced in a laboratory by some military researchers or something like that. Well, a new study on COVID-19's origins is disproving this theory. A team of international researchers have concluded that the novel coronavirus has entirely natural origins through evolution. That's right. They say it's evolution. They say by comparing the available genome sequence data for known coronavirus strains, we can firmly determine that SARS-CoV-2, now they're going to change the name of this thing again. What's up with that? I was just getting used to coronavirus when they changed it to COVID. And now they're calling it SARS-CoV-2. Well, that's not going to catch on. That's not just not catchy enough. SARS-CoV-2 originated through natural processes. Coronaviruses in general are nothing new, according to researchers. The two most recent strains, SARS, which broke out in Asia around 2003, and MERS in the Middle East in 2012, those are both also coronaviruses. Yes. So anyway, what they mean by evolution is it appears that this is a coronavirus that experienced a natural genetic mutation. And if you're an evolutionist, you look at that and you say, wow, Shazam, it's evolution. Wow. But it's actually just a naturally occurring mutation that occurred in this particular virus, making it far more virulent against human beings than, actually not more virulent than SARS or MERS, but perhaps more communicable than SARS or MERS, and significantly more virulent than the seasonal flu, which, by the way, this coronavirus, COVID-19, is going to become part of the seasonal flu. It's going to be one of the flus that goes around. Anyway, and we've basically tanked the global economy over a new flu bug. Okay, but maybe, you know, I'm no epidemiologist, like I've said. Maybe I'm underestimating. Maybe it's going to be panic and blood in the streets. Maybe it's going to be machine gun battles over bread and water and salt and toilet paper. Maybe. Who knows? But one thing I do know is that we don't have to be afraid. We don't have to fear like those who don't know God. The people who don't know God are the ones who are freaking out and panicking, because this life is all they see. It's all they experience. That's all they know. They're materialists. And so a materialist gets really freaked out when his material is threatened. But if you're not a materialist, if you're spiritual, and you know where you're headed after you leave this planet, well, we can still be uncomfortable, we can still worry, we can still prepare, but we don't have to freak out. All right, so we're not freaking out. All right, now, there is other things happening, and not many of them good, as a matter of fact. We go over to Afghanistan, where at least 17 police and army personnel were killed in another apparent insider attack at a joint military base early last Friday. This happened in southern Zabul province, a Taliban stronghold. The defense ministry in Afghanistan says the Taliban carried out the attack with the assistance of Afghan police and army personnel inside the base. So another insider attack. The attack comes as the U.S. and NATO start a staged withdrawal based on the deal that was signed last month between the Taliban and the United States of America, shamefully enough. And also, shamefully to note, the pullout is tied to promises by the Taliban to fight terrorism as they organize insider attacks on the Afghan government. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Okay. Now, I listened to a radio broadcast earlier this week from one of my favorite broadcasters, and he pointed out that at times like this, when the news is real and it's scary and people are worried and afraid and things are happening that are costing people their lives, he said reality sets in and you won't see stories about the use of transgendered pronouns and whatnot. All that stuff goes out the window because we have real news, real fear, real events that are an existential threat, an existential reality that we can actually see and care about, and worry about, think about. And in a normal world, he would be correct. But to show you how far round the bend we've gone and how far down the rat hole we are, in the midst of the pandemic frenzy and the widespread panic and hysteria, in the midst of all that, the Daily Caller is reporting that Marvel Comics has introduced its new Warriors lineup, which includes non-binary and obese characters, two of which are named Safe Space and Snowflake. That's right. The writer who came up with these non-binary comic characters is a fellow named Daniel Kibblesmith, and he's a writer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And he created non-binary characters for children to read about, which means he should be arrested. The cops should kick in his door, throw a jacket over his head, and handcuff him, and drag him out of his house in the middle of the night. Non-binary. In fact, he points out that Snowflake, the Marvel Comics character, Marvel is where the Hulk and Spider-Man came from. And now we have Snowflake, and Snowflake is non-binary and goes by they, them. And it has the power to generate snowflakes. Snowflake-shaped shurikens. What's a shuriken? The throwing stars. I gotcha. Okay. Okay. That's what Snowflake does. And the pervert, Daniel Kibblesmith, who created these characters, says he used the word snowflake because it's normally a pejorative. And he says he wants to change the connotation of the word to make it tough and all that. Okay. He says his perverse characters wear those words and wear them as a badge of honor. And then they go into the obese character, which it bothers me that that they want to lump in an obese character with a tranny or trans or homo or whatever it is, some sexual deviant. I mean, to lump obesity in with sexual deviancy is not fair to the obese, that's all. The obese character is named Trailblazer, and Kibble Smith writes, she claims to get her power from God, but not the God you're thinking of. Wink, wink, he says, as his pole is greased for his trip straight to hell with a jet rocket. Yeah, okay. Let's see. These latest Marvel characters are part of an ongoing initiative by the comic book studio to incorporate more minority characters. See, again, lumping in sexual deviance with minorities is not fair to the minorities. In fact, it's insulting. But there you have it, right there. Marvel's vice president of sales, meanwhile, blames declining book sales on the studio's effort to increase diversity and female character. There you go. You're introducing kids to perverse sexual concepts, and you want to blame the fact that you can't sell any magazine on just regular, normal girls. Shame on you. Doug McBurney, welcome back. It's good to be back and not going anywhere, apparently.
Isn't that sarcastic?
So we were, what's that now?
You're being sarcastic.
I'm being somewhat sarcastic.
No.
So we did find a method of going to our favorite donut shop. We decided to donate blood first. Because we figured that if the cops pulled us over and asked, why have you left your house? We would say, because we're going to donate blood, officer. And he would say, what is that smell of confectionery sugar I smell? Oh, well, after we gave the blood, you see, we were a little dizzy. So they told us to stop and get something to eat. And the closest place was the donut shop. So that's where we went. Actually, our favorite donut shop was closed. Due to the pandemic, frenzy, panic. So we had to get some second string donuts. Which the good thing about donuts is even second string donuts are pretty good. I got this strawberry cheesecake infused. I don't know what that was, but it was really good. And I got a blueberry one too. Yeah, I actually couldn't give blood because I had already given blood before the panic set in about a month and a half ago. I gave blood just because we walked by one of these blood donation buses, and I had never done that. And I had time, and I thought, I'll donate some blood. So I donated blood then, so I went to donate now, and they said, you have to wait another week. So I have made an appointment, and I made it on a Thursday because we found out on Fridays the donut shop does not have the old-fashioned donuts. They only have the raised donuts. And so we are going to go on Thursday morning when the old-fashioned donuts are in and fresh. And I will give blood as well, but I need my extremely attractive audio engineer to be there with me in case I become lightheaded. And so that's why she's in the car, officer, is in case I become lightheaded. All right, now, I told you earlier, I mentioned the fact that in a normal world with normal, sane people, when events like this occur, all the superfluous news about stupid things and social engineering and all the leftist garbage that clogs up the orifices of the news offices around the world, normally that all just goes away because we know that it's fake and stupid. But it's no longer living in a normal world. I have from the Queering of America file a story from Vice.com that says hospitals are preparing for COVID-19, but life-saving trans surgeries are being delayed. That's right, life-saving trans surgeries are being delayed. Yes, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, the trans community is reporting postponed and canceled surgeries, leading to enormous stress and disappointment. Now, I'm not sure where enormous stress and disappointment was considered life-threatening. Maybe with trannies it is, though, because they're already borderline mental cases. So, there's your trans story because the world is no longer sane. The asylum has been commandeered by the inmates. And so they're still demanding, how does this affect the transgendered community? That's of major concern to all of us, I know. And now you know. COVID-19 is leading to enormous stress and disappointment amongst the transgendered community, just in case you were wondering about that. Now we go to Massachusetts. Massachusetts, by the way, for all of my New England Patriots fans out there, and I know I have an enormous cadre of New England Patriots fans in my audience, I did hear from the Centers for Disease Control that the Patriots, even during the pandemic, even if there is a lockdown in the state of Massachusetts, the Patriots will be allowed to continue to cheat. That is not going to change. There are certain norms in America that simply can't be given up. All right. But in Massachusetts, for real, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health has declared a ban on all elective surgeries. You know, knee replacements, hip surgery, rotator cuff, all that elective stuff. Though they've banned it all as they try to prepare for the avalanche of COVID victims who are going to overrun the hospitals in a zombie-like state.
Just for flu.
For the flu. But wait a second. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health, after they issued that ban on elective surgeries, they exempted abortions from that. They said, well, abortions you can get. Hey, and you know what? That begs the question. Will the abortion facilities throw their doors open when the hospitals are overrun? Will we turn to abortion facilities for medical services? It's just an open question. I just thought of it because I just realized as I read this article that abortion facilities don't do any other real medicine. All they do is abortions and handing out abortion pills and birth control pills and dirty magazines and stuff. They don't actually do real medicine. So they're not really considered a part of the medical infrastructure, at least not on a level with, you know, like real doctors who really cure people. So anyway, just an open question. And I have a colleague who he's very worried about the hospitals being overrun and that we're going to run out of ventilators. And I think these are legitimate concerns. But I tried to calm him down. I said, dude, this is America, man. This isn't Italy. We're not going to let people die in the streets. I said, the hospitals get full, then the hotels become hospitals. The casinos become hospitals. The gymnasium becomes hospitals. We'll make hospitals, and we'll figure out a way to make ventilators so fast that it will blow people's minds. It will blow people's minds how fast we figure this out if we have to. So just stop freaking out. It's going to be all right. Back to the abortion maniacs who simply, they say, terminating a pregnancy is not considered a non-essential elective invasive procedure for the purpose of this guidance, said the abortionists running Massachusetts. And then I don't know who this is. This is I'm not going to read it because that it, all these news articles, I don't understand why they put up Twitter posts from like who knows who, like Joe in Worcester, Mass. So well, who cares what Joe in Worcester, Mass thinks about COVID and abortion? I could care less what he thinks. They post it up as if it's news. Anyway, so I'm not going to quote Joe from Worcester and his opinion on that. All right. So the abortions continue. The queering of America continues. The transgendered insanity. It all continues to percolate just somewhat under the surface because there's apparently no other news that's fit to talk about other than coronavirus. And now Harvey Weinstein got coronavirus. Harvey Weinstein got coronavirus at Rikers Island. We don't want to know how he got it. I don't even want to go there. All right, now, from the Justice File, speaking of Harvey Weinstein, we go to the Justice File. The Hill is reporting that robberies featuring suspects wearing medical masks have increased. That's right. So people are wearing... It's just unbelievable. I mean, the depravity of the human heart knows no bounds. To take advantage of the fact that people are wearing masks to now go and commit robberies, it's just unbelievable. Well, but there you have it. It's happening. Uh-huh. Right. And now, speaking of criminals and stick-ups and hold-ups and bad actors, we go to the New York Post, where Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr dumped $1.7 million in stocks just a few weeks before the market crashed. Senator Kelly Loeffler sold $3 million worth. Starting on January 24th, which oddly enough was the day she attended a private briefing for senators on the coronavirus pandemic, Senator Dianne Feinstein sold between $500,000 and $1 million worth of a stock, and her husband sold as much as $5 million worth back on February 18th before the crash, before the panic. But a spokesman for the Feinsteins and all these other people have said that the Feinstein's spokesman, Tom, says that her assets, well, they're in a blind trust, that's right, and she has no involvement in any of her husband's financial decisions. There's a strict firewall that's been constructed. Sure, Diane. She doesn't talk to her husband about finances, no. She's far above all that. Besides, everyone knows Dianne Feinstein doesn't care about money. She only cares about doing good and helping people, especially the children. That's who she cares the most about. And we can see that in her beady little eyes. And just disgusting. Anyway, I don't know if this is a crime or not. I'm not sure because, I mean, you find out about stuff. And then you sell your stock because you have a feeling that things could go badly. I'm just not sure that that's criminal. I mean, these people should probably be arrested for about 345 other things above the stock trading. You know, what about the rampant murder of innocent children across the country for the last 40 years that Dianne Feinstein's been intimately involved in? And that all of these senators have signed budgets that codify and even pay for killing people. So, I mean, the stock thing, does that bother you that much? It doesn't bother me that much. That's all. But any opportunity I can take to criticize Dianne Feinstein, I like to take it. These other two senators, I have no idea who they are, but I'm sure they're vile, disgusting, corrupt, and horrible people. What makes me say that? Well, they're in the Senate, okay? That's all. If you're in the Senate, my default position is that you're a corrupt, thieving, lying, horrible, evil, miserable person who probably deserves to be arrested. That's my default position. And then you would have to prove otherwise. You would have to introduce some evidence to prove otherwise. In fact, I can't think of any level of governance of which I do not, about which I do not feel the same way. I'm trying to think. Maybe, let's see. I probably some sheriffs out there I wouldn't feel that way about. A few of them. A few sheriffs out there. Anybody else? Anybody else who's not on the on the list of the notoriously horrible in government? There might be, maybe some librarians. Is that considered a governing official, a librarian? I think that's considered a governing official. There's probably a few dog catchers out there who are all right. Although I had a bad experience with a dog catcher because he caught my dog. I didn't appreciate that. I had to ransom my dog back from the dog catcher. So I've had a bad taste in my mouth about dog catchers in general from that time going forward. And now, speaking of criminals, speaking of, at best, these are idiots I'm about to talk about in Philadelphia. And at worst, these are just corrupt and evil. Corrupt and evil. But it's the Philadelphia Police Department. They announced last Tuesday that officers will arrest and process low-level nonviolent offenders and then let them go. Because they need to keep the people out of jail so they don't get coronavirus. It's not comprehensible. Oh, but they do say those arrested will be rearrested at a later date. Sure. Listen to this. If an officer believes that releasing an individual would pose a threat to public safety, the officer will notify a supervisor. And there will be a review. And then they'll utilize discretion and take the appropriate course of actions. And then they say those arrested for violent crimes will not be released. Well, that would go against their current policy of incarcerating and then releasing even violent criminals. So anyway, now there was quite the controversy after this moronic, idiotic, stupid, or perhaps evil announcement was made. And the police chief had to clarify. Police Commissioner Danielle, she tweeted out, quote, "Philadelphia is not turning a blind eye to crime," unquote. Well, if you weren't turning a blind eye to crime, Commissioner Danielle, then why did you have to tweet that? Well, you had to tweet that because it's obvious that you're about to start turning a blind eye to crime. And the worst thing, even as bad as that, is that you announce it to the world. So now you're just encouraging the criminals. Hey, it's a free-for-all out there. It's Philadelphia, after all. The city of brotherly love. Come on in and rob us blind.
You got it!
It's the weekly word. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, folks. I got to tell you, I've been observing human nature amongst various responses to the current crisis. I think there's a lot of people out there who have a guilt complex about just never having suffered. You know, here in America, I mean, unless you subject yourself to suffering, it's not normal, and we haven't suffered. And so I think people have a guilt complex about never having suffered, and in some perverse way, a lot of them want to suffer, or they want to go through something horrible. And so here we find ourselves, because we've had these pandemics before, but how come we never had a mass freakout like this before? I know I've probably talked about this on the last three shows, but I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't get it. I think there's a lot of younger people who they have this guilt complex about never having suffered, although that's really not their fault. It's their parents' fault, I guess. Parents didn't let them suffer enough. I don't know. But there's a lot of these young people who genuinely want America taken down a notch. They have, and I think it's related to the guilt complex. They have like a love-hate relationship with America. They love all the good stuff they've got. They love all their tech and their comforts and the food and the restaurants and the clothing. They love all that stuff, but they hate capitalism and they hate corporations and blah, blah, blah. And then I think the main reason that we've had a major, major freakout is that the most godless generation ever raised on our shores is now of age. And they're able to flip out and affect the economy in a fairly significant way. And then when they start panicking, then the older people who are normally fairly calm, they start panicking. And before you know it, there's no toilet paper on the shelves. And there's no bottled water at the store, which should give you some insight into the two main things people concern themselves with in a crisis. I'll just leave it at that. All right. More from the widespread panic file. There are good things happening related to the coronavirus. Yes, you have to look for them, but they are there. New York City has closed all government schools until at least April 20th, and perhaps they will cancel the rest of the entire academic year. Parents are being actively encouraged to homeschool their children. Ha! I love it. Yes. So that's one good thing. Although there be in the secular world, of course, the parents are being encouraged to continue to imbibe the government curriculum. But what's going to happen here, ladies and gentlemen, an awful lot of people are going to realize that they don't need to send their kids to school, especially if this goes on for a significant period of time. And I'd be very encouraged. People will look into homeschooling. They'll find out it's not nearly as hard as they think it is.
But they don't like kids there.
What's that?
A lot of people don't like
a lot of people don't like their kids being at home, is what you're saying. Okay, well, here, I gotta listen to this. You couldn't have been more prescient with your commentary. She said that a lot of parents, they don't like their kids being home. Well, that might be true. But right now, there's no option, right? So that's stressful, right? Once you have the option of sending your kid to school or not, having gone through this, a significant number of people will never return to the public schools. And that's good. That's good news. But to my extremely attractive audio engineer's point, a report out of Fort Worth in Texas, doctors at the Cook Children's Hospital in Fort Worth have noticed a significant spike in severe child abuse cases. They had 6 cases last week alone of severe child abuse, and they said that's typically what they see in about a month, which that's tragic right there. That in Fort Worth, Texas, which, yeah, it's a big city, but I mean, severe child abuse, 6 a month? That's a shocking statistic. But the doctors now say that, I'll quote the doctor, Christy Thornhill, director of the trauma program. She says, "We knew an increase in abuse was going to occur, but this happened faster than we ever imagined." She believes this These unprecedented times have simply become too much for some parents. I'm sorry, that's a fellow doctor, Jamie Kaufman, MD. So they say that, they say people, let's see what Dr. Kaufman says, people have so much increased stress right now, stressors can lead to abuse. And I really feel sorry for this doctor if that's what he has to see in his professional life. I'd get out of that line of work. Stressors can lead to abuse, and he knows this is a fact. So you would think that stress would drive a family closer together. You would think, right? Especially if there's a chance that everyone's going to get sick and die. There is the chance of that happening. Not everyone, but half a family could be wiped out by this disease if it's as bad as if some of the worst case scenarios start to play out. So you would think that would drive people closer together, but no. In some cases, it leads to the parents abusing the children. I can't wrap my head around that myself, but I think there had to be some underlying factors. So anyway, let's move on to news completely unrelated to the coronavirus. From the politics file, Obama-era whistleblower Philip Haney was found dead with a gunshot wound to his chest last month. We reported on this. Well, now two Republican lawmakers who knew him personally have indicated that, in fact, he was murdered. Gee, you think? Haney was one of the founding members of the Department of Homeland Security, and he exposed the Obama administration's dangerously politically correct national security policies in 2015 and 16, and was reportedly in recent contact with top officials about returning to work for the DHS. And he is said to have kept a thumb drive around his neck containing sensitive government data about Islamic extremism and national security, but the whereabouts of that thumb drive is unknown at this time. Louis Gohmert says he knew the fella. And he says, Louis Gohmert said that he'd been concerned about Haney's safety because, quote, with all the information he knew and people who could have gotten in trouble, unquote. In a piece published in The Hill, May of 2016, Haney revealed that the Department of Homeland Security had ordered him to delete or modify several hundred records of individuals tied to designated Islamic terrorist groups like Hamas. That data was deleted from the important federal database, the Treasury Enforcement Communications System. So now I understand. Somehow I missed this story, along with, I'm sure, most of you. So Haney, basically Obama deleted terrorists' information from the national database that would alert law enforcement that these people were terrorists. And Obama thought that was mean. It's not very nice. Just because a fella's name is Mohammed, does that mean he has to be in that database? That seems racist, seems homophobic, seems transphobic. We're not going to tolerate it. And so Obama deleted all the, yeah, that's what he did. So Haney reported on this. He exposed it. He was a whistleblower, in the real sense of the word, a whistleblower. Yet normally a whistleblower, when he blows the whistle, then he goes up to Congress and he testifies right in front of God and everybody. And that's what this fella did. And his life was put in danger by it. So after he was ordered to delete all this data, about a month later, after blowing the whistle, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, told him he was forced to destroy documents about people tied to Islamic terrorism. So Louis Gohmert was worried about him. Another fellow, Bill Becker, president and chief counsel of FreedomX, posted up on Facebook that he was shocked that his friend Phil had been found dead of gunshot wounds. And he told the California Globe, quote, Phil had firsthand evidence that Obama was secretly advancing Islamic hegemony in the United States. He sacrificed his career to expose it. He was a friend and a patriot. And patriots are not very popular in the Obama circle. And the original report of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the chest has been rescinded by the police who found the body. And as of right now, we don't know who killed this fella. But it looks an awful lot like it was not suicide. And it was probably related to his whistleblowing activities. All right. Let's see here. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. Another story that has nothing to do with the coronavirus pandemic, mass hysteria. Springfield, Missouri. Isn't that where we started? We started in Springfield, Missouri. We did, in the toilet paper aisle of a Walmart is where the show started today. And now we've meandered back around for something, horrible. A man fired randomly from his vehicle while driving through a southwest Missouri city before eventually crashing into a convenience store where he walked inside and continued shooting. And he killed three people. He killed three civilians and one police officer. This is the Associated Press. This is maddening how they report this. Listen to how they put this. He says he walked inside, opened fire, and left five people dead, including a police officer and himself. It's almost as if he wasn't directly involved. If you just read the grammatical construct of that. It's almost as if he wasn't directly involved. He opened fire and left five people dead, including a police officer and himself. Okay. The gunman's motives remain unclear. Well, I think his motive is perfectly clear. He was obviously suicidal and decided he wanted to get homicidal. That's it. Suicide by cop and take some other people with you. The gunman died from a self-inflicted gunshot. There's a 31-year-old guy, just decides to just go out on a killing spree, ending with his own suicide. I don't really care what the underlying motive was. I really don't care. His name should be blotted from history, from the history books. It should never be known that this man ever even existed. His name should be deleted from all of history. He should be disappeared and forgotten is what should happen to that guy. Just horrible. And meanwhile, from the justice file, a judge was shot and critically wounded outside a courthouse in Mississippi. Chancery Judge Charlie Smith was shot. And chancery judges in Mississippi, by the way, handled divorce and child custody cases. Yeah, this fellow was... Let's see, he became a judge in January 2019 after more than 20 years as a youth court and county court prosecutor. So here's a fellow who's been an operative in the industry of crime for the last 20 years, and now he has become the victim of the industry of crime from which he derived his living and now his dying. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That was a particularly dreadful segue. But these are dreadful times. Oh, last week I was trying to think of who was the famous person who said, "I hope you live in interesting times," and it's not attributable to anyone. It's considered an ancient Chinese proverb that was adopted by the British and eventually ended up here on the Weekly Worldview. We don't know where... We do not know from whence it came. Now, probably the one person who is happy about the coronavirus pandemic, if that's possible that anybody could be happy about it, it would be Democrat Andrew Gillum. Yes. He's the man happiest about the flu scare because he was the one found with the homo prostitute and the crystal meth in the motel. Oh, what? Whoa, you haven't heard about that? Andrew Gillum, you'll remember, almost became the governor of Florida until he lost the election, and then he was not. But he almost did. He was widely seen as a rising Democrat star. He's young, he's black, he's got charisma to burn, and he hails from a critically important swing state. Well, that all came to an end last Friday when Gillum was found unresponsive and inebriated in a Miami Beach hotel with a male companion, and baggies of what police suspect is crystal methamphetamine. Now, Gillum, Gillum says, I was in Miami last night. This was his response the following day when news outlets began to call him and ask him about his unfortunate incident. And Mr. Gillum said, I was in Miami last night for a wedding celebration when first responders were called to assist one of my friends. While I had too much to drink, I want to be clear that I have never used methamphetamines. In fact, I'm going to use the plural of the word methamphetamine just so it looks like I don't even know how to pronounce methamphetamines, let alone ever do any methamphetamines. Okay, and then, of course, he announced he was immediately going into rehab. Okay, so you get drunk at a wedding, and now you need rehab. Okay, that's really believable. Let's see here. Reporter, Mr. Nolte at Breitbart, asks, he says, I've got a few questions. Hold on there, Mr. I'm going to rehab until this all blows over. Hold on just a second. The man who overdosed and who was in the room alone with Gillum until another man showed up at 11 p.m. is a gay male escort. Excuse me, Mr. Gillum? What were y'all doing in the room for the several hours before your other friend showed up? That's just a question. We're going to leave that hanging out there. Let's see. Secondly, the man who rented the motel room told the New Times in an interview, I personally was not celebrating a wedding. I don't know if Mr. Gillum was. I don't know that he was in town for a wedding. He did not mention that. Okay, so Gillum married his wife, Arjai Gillum, 11 years ago. So it certainly wasn't his wedding he was at. He's already married. By the way, Gillum has 3 children together, and this is, I feel really horrible for his kids. This is terrible. But Mr. Gillum is a lying, thieving, child-killing, homosexualist, creep, pervert, one of the people destroying America. He deserves to be utterly destroyed politically, utterly destroyed. He should never be allowed to even run for dog catcher is how far down into the ground his political career needs to be driven with a stake right through his political heart. So I have no mercy for Andrew Gillum. No mercy at all. I'll have the same amount of mercy for him as he had for all the children who were murdered while he was in government or running for government or a mouthpiece for the Democrat machine. That's how much mercy I'll have. I feel bad for his kids, though. I feel bad. I don't feel bad for his wife, though. I don't really feel bad for, because if she's probably just like him. Let's see here. Final question for Mr. Gillum. Whose wedding were you attending? And can I follow up? Why were you drunk and alone with another man who was not a guest of this wedding, but was overdosing on drugs? I mean, just a couple small questions, Mr. Gillum. Hopefully, Mr. Gillum will get back to us on that, but don't count on it, because the Medstream urinalists out there, they're going to let him walk on this one, if at all possible. Maybe his wife will have the good sense to leave him. I mean, guys with a homo in a motel with crystal meth? I mean, holy cow. Wow. That's pretty dangerous, Ms. Gillum. I mean, is it really worth it? All right. Finally, from the plague file, the plague, I said. Yes. The plague of locusts is still coming, folks. And the plague of locusts has already devastated Africa. Devastated Africa. And now the plague of locusts, the likes of which haven't been seen for over 30 years, is about to hit Africa and the Middle East, adding to the perfect biblical storm. The current coronavirus pandemic is affecting travel of international experts and in-country gatherings for training to combat the locust threat. That's all according to Senior Locust Forecasting Officer Keith Cressman, based out of Rome. So the locust swarms haven't gotten any smaller, and the efforts now to fight them have been disrupted by the pandemic fiasco, scare, freak out, flip out. Cressman, Mr. Cressman, works at Locust Watch. I didn't know there was a Locust Watch, but I'm glad there is. I think that's all right. It's a division of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization over at the UN, which gives emergency assistance to countries facing desert locust invasions. The most recent forecast report, there are new extremely alarming swarms forming in the Horn of Africa, and they should hit the Middle East right around Passover. So around Easter time, the locusts will be an existential threat to Middle Eastern agriculture. The previous time the region has been in such danger was during the plague of 1987 through 1989. And I wasn't really paying attention to the news back then. But I know that Africa was in dire straits. From the 1990s were terrible in Africa, and this is probably one of the reasons. This is probably one of the reasons was this locust swarms. Let's see here. I love this. This is the Times of Israel writing this, where I read this article. As depicted in the Book of Exodus, when the highly mobile swarms of desert locusts form, they are ravenous eaters who consume their own weight per day, targeting food, crops, and forage. The inability to travel due to coronavirus restrictions may prevent proper, timely treatment. Wow. This is a perfect storm. So, you know, this is a perfect storm of uncertainty and fear, amplified by a now godless culture. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. And everybody's freaking out. And we'll know in a few weeks if we should have freaked out this bad or if we maybe didn't have to freak out this bad. Although we may never know until we get to the other side, because all the politicians, if it ends well, which is my thinking, is that yes, there are going to be sick people, yes, people are going to die. But keep in mind, 22,000 have died this flu season from the flu, the seasonal flu. 150 children have died from just the seasonal flu. So why doesn't the seasonal flu justify the hand washing and the lockdowns? And I mean, are those deaths just not as glamorous? Are there just not enough of them? Well, that's the fact, is there's just not enough of them. And to assume that this coronavirus was going to produce enough deaths to do what we're going through right now, well, I just don't see that in the numbers. I don't see it. But I could be wrong. I hope I'm not. But I think it ends well, and the politicians will all take credit for the lockdowns and everything but the toilet paper shortage. That one they'll hand off to their spokesperson. Have their spokesperson address all that. Meanwhile, to show again how round the bend we've gone and how far down the rat hole we are, another story not related in any way to the coronavirus pandemic, epidemic of fear and crises. You remember Kim Fox, the Cook County State's attorney, who dropped the charges against Jussie Smollett when he so obviously pulled off a racist hoax? You remember her? Well, she just won the Democrat primary in Cook County in Chicago. She fended off a challenge and will be the Democrat nominee for state's attorney And if I'm not mistaken, there's only like 9 Republicans in Chicago, so there's no way she's going to lose. But don't worry, she says, quote, "I want to help make Cook County a more inclusive and thriving community where everyone is welcome, even Jesse." So you drop charges against an obvious race-hoaxing homo, and your stock as a Democrat politician apparently rises, which is just a fine commentary on not being a part of the whole the Democrat Party, frankly, and especially in Chicago, right? All right, we're almost out of time, so I want to close with some. Well, this is encouraging news, but it's also suspicious. Is any encouraging news coming out now is deemed suspicious. And so the reason I deem this as suspicious is because the source is the Iranian news agency. So they are reporting that a 103-year-old woman in Iran has recovered after being infected with the new coronavirus. She was hospitalized for about a week, but Dr. Navid Danayi is quoted as saying she was discharged after making a complete recovery from the Semnan University of Medical Sciences. Yes. The woman, according to IRNA, the Iranian news agency, the woman was the second elderly patient in Iran to have survived the disease. The other was a 91-year-old man. He was sick for 3 days, but he recovered last Monday, despite the fact that he had high blood pressure and asthma. That's one tough dude. The elderly, we know, according to this is from France24.com, the elderly are the most vulnerable to the disease, which first emerged in China late last year. That's another sign of how insane we've become, is that calling it a Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus is somehow now deemed racist. I mean, that's what we always do. We always name the bug from where we first found the bug. So to call it the Wuhan flu, I mean, that would be completely... it's just unbelievable. Anyway, hopefully one thing that this whole episode will teach us, or at least expose, is some of the ludicrous things that the left are allowed to argue with us about. I think in the near future, we're going to be allowed to actually reach out and just slap them across the face and say, shut up. That's stupid. We're not going to talk about transgender pronouns. We're not going to talk about racist naming of flu bugs. Just smack. Just give them a smack. Maybe. Maybe that'll be one other good thing to come out of this. We can all hope for that. But that's it. That's the show. We're out of time. So we have to go. We have things to do around here as we shelter in place. Uh-huh. And I hope you enjoy your time off, although it is unpaid time off for most of us. We will enjoy it. And we're going to catch up on some stuff and some things. We might even soundproof this studio so that you don't hear the roosters crowing through here. I can hear them in my headphones. All right. Thank you. I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I've forgotten how I end the show because I'm a little off my game. This has wigged me out a little bit, I must say. Yeah, it has. All right. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.